This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Fighting has intensified in the Iraqi holy city of Najaf. At the same time, an 8-member delegation of Iraqi political leaders has arrived in the city aboard U.S. military helicopters to discuss a peace settlement. A bit later, we'll talk with a foreign policy expert about what's at stake for both sides as the battle for Najaf continues. But first, we go to Baghdad to speak with Scott Baldoff, staff writer for the Christian Science Monitor, who just returned from Najaf a couple of hours ago. And welcome back to Talk of the Nation, Scott.
Thank you.
Obviously, there's a slight delay. I'm just telling that to the listeners so they won't expect rapid responses from you right after I finish the question. The delegation of 8 Iraqi leaders, as we mentioned, arrived in Najaf shortly after you left. What can you tell us about their mission to Najaf, and are they presenting the rebel leader there, Muqtada al-Sadr, with a proposal for negotiations, or are they presenting him with an ultimatum?
Well, of course, it's a little of both. The delegation has been asked to tell Muqtada al-Sadr that he must drop his weapons, withdraw from the shrine, and leave the shrine in the care of the Iraqi government. These are not demands that are likely to give a face-saving way out for Muqtada al-Sadr. Sadr, of course, has famously been saying over the last few days that he and his men are willing to fight to the last drop of blood. The delegation is just part of a longer process, though, of negotiation that's been going on since April when the uprising began with this particular Shiite militia. And some people see this as a potential way to continue putting pressure on Sadr to drop the weapons and join the political process as more of a mainstream political leader.
At the same time, if he rejects a proposal from this National Assembly, doesn't that give a free field to the Prime Minister Iyad Alawi to order the U.S.-led troops in to finish it?
It certainly does, and there have been indications in the last 24 hours that if not a full assault, then at least a long, punishing siege could ensue. Right now, when we left Najaf, the American troops were within 100 meters of the shrine, the area in which the army is able to operate. That's the Shiite militia. Keeps getting smaller and smaller, and the wiggle room politically gets less and less for Sadr himself. The last night of battle, we experienced it. Unfortunately, we're pinned down for about 20 hours inside the old city, unable to move and really unable to see much, but we could hear it all going around us. And the U.S. might, we're talking tanks and Bradley fighters, fighting machines, push the Sadr's men further and further into the shrine area, and they seem to have fewer and fewer options.
In the story that you're writing for tomorrow's paper, you've been kind enough to give us an advanced glimpse at it, but you write, as you say, you weren't able to see much there in the old city, but were able to describe some remarkable people that you met, that you stayed with, and who are caught up in this fighting in the middle of it. What's their attitude towards Muqtada al-Sadr? What's their attitude towards the Americans at this point?
I think you would be surprised how ambivalent they are to both sides. When we first started talking with them, they had nothing but contempt for Muqtada al-Sadr, but they also said that, frankly, there's part of them that wanted the Mahdi army to win and to defeat the Americans because they didn't have much trust in the Americans anymore. They were frustrated at the pace of development that was taking place in Iraq. They also felt that the Shias were getting a bad hand in all of the power deals. We got to remember Prime Minister Alawi himself is a Shia, but he is seen as more of a former member of the Ba'ath party of Saddam Hussein rather than a Shia. And many Shias who make up the majority of the population would like to see greater power. But again, the battle lines keep shifting around them. You can't really pick one side or the other. You have to be willing to act friendly with either side. And these people have been in the front lines for so long, I'm not even sure they know what they think.
And this, we should not give the impression this uprising, this Muqtada al-Sadr uprising, is solely limited to Najaf. Obviously, there's been a lot of fighting in Baghdad today. Reports of fighting between Mehdi army people and British soldiers as well in the southern city of Basra. All of this, Scott Baldoff, comes as more than 1,000 Iraqis were meeting in Baghdad to choose an interim National Assembly. As I understand it, that meeting has now been extended by a day. This is the group that, in fact, sent this delegation to Najaf.
That's correct. And this is a government, the Iraqi government, is looking for its legitimacy at this time. It's testing that legitimacy in a lot of different ways. Number one, at this conference to try and get buy-in, to get a lot of different types of people in Iraq to support this in a democratic way by choosing their own leadership. But at the same time, their will is being tested out in places like Najaf by sending in American troops primarily, but also it's thought that if there is a final assault, it will be Iraqi special forces that will be sent in. The government's ability to get people inside the military of their own government to buy into this and to fight against their own fellow Iraqis is going to be tested in the next days, and it's going to be tested there in Najaf.
You can read about the last 24 hours in Najaf in tomorrow's editions of the Christian Science Monitor and a story by Scott Baldoff. Thanks very much, Scott.
My pleasure.
Scott Baldoff, a staff writer for the Christian Science Monitor. We spoke with him from his office in Baghdad. Back here in Washington, we turn to foreign policy expert Philip Gordon of the Brookings Institution. He's co-author of Allies at War, America, Europe, and the Crisis Over Iraq. He joins us from the studios at Brookings, just down the street here in Washington, D.C. Good of you to be with us today.
Nice to be here.
We just heard Scott Baldoff talking a little bit about what's at stake in Najaf for Prime Minister Iyad Alawi, for the new Iraqi government. Clearly, they and Muqtada al-Sadr are the people with the most at stake in Najaf.
Well, there's an awful lot at stake in Najaf. The stakes couldn't be higher. I think that the basic question is, who is in charge in Iraq? Or put it differently, is anyone in charge in Iraq? The great worry about Iraq fragmenting before we went in was just that question. Would there be someone to exercise the most basic function of a government, which is to maintain security and authority within the borders? And there is, at least in theory, a sovereign Iraqi government now, but that government is being challenged by Muqtada al-Sadr and his militias. And if that challenge is not met, it really opens an entire Pandora's box of that question, who, if anyone, is in charge in Iraq. And if the answer is nobody, then we're in big trouble, because you can easily see how different groups and different ethnic groups and different militias will form, leading to the chaos that we were afraid of before going in the first place.
As you see this meeting underway in Baghdad, ostensibly to pick the 100-member National Assembly, the interim National Assembly, elections will be held, they're scheduled for, I guess, January. But this meeting immediately disrupted by outrage by some at the fighting in Najaf. A delegation is appointed. Something must be done. Is this a sign of weakness, or is this a sign of politics emerging in Baghdad?
Well, that's exactly the right question. I mean, politics is always difficult, and a sorting out process takes place. And there's the slight possibility, at least, that this is just part of that sorting out process. That's why the government is trying to negotiate with al-Sadr rather than just crushing him, and maybe can find some space in Iraqi politics for that voice to be heard. And then what you get is a very messy but nonetheless progressing situation. The alternative to that, of course, is that it's worse than just the natural political process being sorted out, but rather a direct challenge to the supposedly legitimate and sovereign government in Iraq. That's frankly what it looks like. It looks like these groups are saying, no, you are not the government of Iraq, and the government of Iraq will be sorted out through power, and might makes right, and we're going to challenge that power. That's why, again, I say that the stakes couldn't be higher, because if that question is not answered, if the government cannot show that this is part of a political process, then I think the whole thing risks spinning out of control.
We're talking with Philip Gordon of the Brookings Institution. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Philip, obviously the United States is a major player in all of this. And you go back to the situation during, while the country is still formally under occupation, the situation in Fallujah, where U.S. military officials said, we are going to we're going to finish the deal in Fallujah. They got halfway through and then decided to stop and negotiate with the Shia leaders in Fallujah. Earlier, I guess it was last week, U.S. Commanders around Najaf saying, we are about to launch the final all-out assault. We're going to finish this in Najaf. Again, they've been stopped and negotiations are underway. The United States has a lot of credibility on the line as well.
Exactly. And so far, the precedents that you referred to are not exactly promising for a positive outcome, in the sense that, you know, especially as you mentioned, Fallujah, Americans were savagely killed. We made some very tough statements that this was not going to be tolerated. We were going to take care of these terrorists and wipe them out. And instead what happened was that we encircled Fallujah, used some military power, angered a lot of civilians, but never found the perpetrators in the first place, and ended up in some ways with the worst of all possible worlds, in which we killed some civilians, angered the local population, talked tough, but then weren't able to implement the tough policy. That's sort of where we stand in Najaf as well, where we have made clear, you know, we mounted a challenge to al-Sadr after he was challenging the authority in Iraq, closed down his newspaper, he rebelled, and we said no. We and the legitimate Iraqi government are responsible for security here. We're not going to let you challenge it. But then implementing that proves more difficult in practice than in just words. And that's, I think, where we stand now is, we want to help the sovereign Iraqi government exercise that authority over the population, but at the same time realize that any sort of indiscriminate use of force, especially by Americans, can lead to a backlash by the population.
Especially if it involves attacks on the shrine of Imam Ali, that holy site there in Najaf, where some fighters are indeed holed up.
Of course, and that's why it I think, even more than in the case of Fallujah, is imperative to rely as much as possible on the Iraqis and the Iraqi government. That's what the Iraqi government is telling us, and I think we've been following that. I mean, militarily, the U.S. military could crush al-Sadr's militia just as a pure military matter. We could easily put in enough troops and go in there and wipe that militia of several thousand out. But if the result of that were destruction of the shrine and lots of civilian casualties, you could easily be inflaming especially the Shia population of Iraq against the United States. And that's why so far both the Americans and the Iraqi government have decided it's better if the Iraqi government itself imposes Iraqi law and security in that country. The big question there, obviously, though, is are they capable of doing it? So far, they have not shown the ability or really the willingness militarily to do it. If it comes to street-by-street fighting, the militias have proven more committed to their goals, so far at least, than the Iraqi government committed to its goals.
We've been talking about the Shias, who are the majority of the population in Iraq, and this argument, I guess, between the al-Sadr people who are impatient to have power now and through whatever means necessary, and others led by perhaps the Grand Ayatollah al-Sistani, who's apparently willing to wait for power to derive from the ballot box and elections, and the Shias' numerical advantage in that respect. We've also talked some about the Sunnis in Fallujah. There is a third major player in terms of ethnicities in Iraq, the Kurds, who live in the northern part of the country, who have enjoyed semi-autonomy or virtual autonomy for much of the past 10 years, and are sitting watching all of this. And what are they making of this struggle in Baghdad?
Well, that's one further reason why the stakes are high and why this is about more than Najaf. The Kurds are watching to see if the Iraqi government is capable of imposing its rule on the entirety of the country and moving forward in the political process that we were discussing earlier. If it can, and it can show that a political space can be made for different ethnic groups and other groups within Iraq, then maybe they will conclude that they can be part of that process and maintain their autonomy and maintain what they need in the northern part of Iraq to be satisfied. If, on the other hand, the militia, al-Sadr's people, use force to get what they want against the will of the government, I think the message will really be sent, you know, go grab your rifles. It's every group for themselves. And if you don't fight for what you want, you're going to lose it. So the spillover effect of what happens in Najaf and parts of Baghdad with the Shia, I think, has implications for the Kurds as well.
Philip Gordon, thanks very much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Philip Gordon, foreign policy expert at the Brookings Institution, co-author of Allies at War, America, Europe, and the Crisis Over Iraq. He joined us from the Brookings studio. Stay tuned to NPR News for more on the updates, on the fighting in Najaf as it develops. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.